We're all familiar with the phrase, one man's trash is another man's treasure. It's often used to describe how something that isn't useful to us might be useful to someone else. But when it comes to thinking about our actual trash, as in the waste we as a society produce through all our commercial, industrial, and other large-scale processes, humans have historically not been very good at seeing and harnessing the value of the very products we discard. Luckily for us, people like today's guest, Dr. Jose Gonzalez Rodriguez, an analytical chemist at the University of Lincoln, are on the case and working on fantastic technologies that could help us reclaim the treasure from the trash we make. I'm Matt Young, and welcome to Spotlights.
So hello, Jose, and welcome to Spotlights. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Why don't you start by introducing yourself to our listeners, telling us, you know, who you are and what it is you do?
I'm basically Jose Gonzalez. I'm an associate professor in the School of Chemistry of the University of Lincoln. And I've been working for a little while. I'm an analytical chemist, just to start with. And I've been working for a little while in the use of basically materials that are valuable or basically materials that pose a risk to the population and how we can actually either use them or eliminate them from the environment. So been developing technology that allow us to do that, basically use and reuse, but also eliminate something we don't want to be out there.
So how did you get into this particular field? It might not be the first thing that people would associate with an analytical chemist. How did you end up in this area of research?
Well, my master's in environmental sciences. I have always had an interest in environment. And also, basically, as an analytical chemist, we are all the time told that we need to solve problems. And that's our main thing, is trying to actually understand the world around us. And then through analysis, we are going to understand whether something is useful, something is dangerous. So in terms of why I'm interested in this, it's simply because, I mean, the world we live in is full of chemicals. I mean, I'm a chemist because if you look around you, there are chemicals everywhere. And I know the chemicals basically are associated like a bad word because it's like, oh yeah, chemicals. No, but CO2 is a chemical, DNA is a chemical, sugar is a chemical. So actually they are chemical products and compounds. But some chemicals are better than others, and an excess of certain chemicals are bad. So in terms of, for example, recycling, we are producing loads of things. And the problem we have is we keep producing, we keep consuming, but what happens when we don't want something? We just basically put it in the bin. And then where is that going to go? Well, landfills, or we're going to have them stored or piled somewhere. And then I was thinking, can we actually do something about it? And there is something like mining the residues, mining the waste. Can we actually go and try to extract anything valuable from that waste and actually use it? And I started when I was doing my PhD, because ironically, my PhD is in wine analysis. And I was basically working in a winery for a little while. And then people say, why the hell are you doing it? Why are you here? I mean, you're producing wine. But you see, when you're producing wine, you have loads and loads. I mean, the grapes is your primary product. But then all the leaves and everything else that goes with the grapes, basically when you crush them, is a residue. And in the wine industry, actually, you learn that you don't throw anything. Nothing is to waste. And then we manage these different ways to actually use it for animal food or for basically come back to the environment. And then it's a fertilizer, natural fertilizer. So actually, you learn that you have to be ecological when you're actually producing wine. And we developed technology to actually extract compounds that they were from that waste. So actually, I started a little bit when I was doing my PhD, but now I'm moving more into analysis and extraction of metals. That's what we have been working with certain companies in the UK to actually extract valuable metals from, for example, the ashes of power stations. And then the latest that we have or we are going to be working is the extraction or the cleaning up of the waters agriculture use, and we're going to be extracting pesticides that basically farmers have been using and they need to use, because otherwise basically many crops will be ruined. So actually there are so many things we do every day, so much waste we generate, so much waste that we interact with the environment. We need to actually do something about restoring that equilibrium, coming back to the way it was originally. And that's why that is my aim, is can we actually take something we have used, can we actually extract it and then put it back in the environment? So in a sense, we keep that balance. And we are it sounds a little bit like romantic, being in harmony with our environment. So.
There's clearly a big ecological, environmental focus to your work. And it does sound really, really important, especially nowadays. I think people are more aware of what they're throwing away and where it's going. And over the last decade or so, especially here in the UK, we've gotten a lot better at recycling, knowing what to recycle, why we should recycle. But I think one thing, as far as us as the general public are concerned, we're a lot less aware of the value of these waste products that we're throwing away. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about what exactly is in some of these waste products and what we can maybe do with them. Because for many people, they might think, well, that seems like a really expensive, involved process to try and start extracting valuables or compounds from, in your case, metals as well, from these parts of waste, you know. Is that even economical or environmental in itself to try and do that, rather than to take the raw materials? And obviously, once we manage to get them, what can we do with them?
I'm going to give you an example that we got some funding from the government to actually work with a company. It's GSA Environmental. It's actually based in the Bull Technology Center. With this company, we have been extracting vanadium from ashes that you can get from the power stations. And then when you think about vanadium, and actually it's a form of vanadium pentoxide. When you think about it, I mean, you need energy. You go and get carbon or oil, and then you burn it. And then you're going to get this ash. And what do we do with it? I mean, sometimes we burn it again to actually get further energy. But then many times, basically, we get this residue that is, it contains these metals. And one, especially this vanadium pentoxide, is very valuable. Because if you look at the way things are going, we need to store energy. We are developing new technologies in terms of batteries. And actually, it's very interesting, because this vanadium pentoxide that you can extract from the ashes of a power station is actually an electrolyte, or you can use it as an electrolyte in the new generation high capacity batteries. So actually, you're using something to produce energy, you go to the waste, you extract this metal, and then you can reuse it to store energy that you're going to actually need in the future. And that's an example of how basically we can dig our waste and we can extract these valuable metals. I mean, everybody knows about the electronics. I mean, there's gold in electronics. I mean, you can actually extract it. The problem is so small amount that it's basically you need tons to extract something that is meaningful. But in terms of other metals, I mean, vanadium, not platinum, but yeah, but other heavy metals that have industrial uses, if we can actually extract it from these waste, that will prevent mining and open new mines. Why? Because that has an environmental cost. I mean, it's not just money. It's basically is how much we are altering the ecosystem. How many species are we going to actually move or relocate because we are going to start altering an area? We can make it economical. That's the key point. So it's not just because we are going to save the planet. I mean, that's the aim. But then we need to make it compatible with economics, and recycling and mining the waste is something that we can do relatively easily. And actually, it can save us money in the long term.
So one term that people may have heard of so far is the term circular economy. Yeah. And from what I understand, processes like this that you're working on are trying to fit into this circular economy type model, whereby products that we extract from the earth, make and put out into the world are not simply left thrown away, but we then continue to use whatever's left and effectively, you know, try and stop there being any waste at all. I was wondering if you could maybe say a bit more about that and your thoughts or ideas on how your work fits into that.
You're absolutely right. It's exactly what we're trying to do, a circular economy. It's the idea is that we don't, in that sense, nothing is a waste. It's just a product that is going to be used by another industry to produce something. And even when you finish that chain, that end product can come back to the either the environment, or basically you use it for something else. And that is the idea, that we are not wasting anything. Because, I mean, let's be honest, we are living in a planet that is limited. And the resources we have at the moment are the ones that we have in this planet. In the moment we use them all, what are we going to do? Until basically we have that idea that we can mine asteroids and we can go out there and actually do mining in space, which probably it'll happen at some point in the history of humanity. But at the moment, we are not in that position. So actually, whatever we do needs to be sustainable and needs to actually keep our economy going, but also our style of life. And now basically we are altering the ecosystem so much, we are changing the climate. Basically, we're changing the weather. We are beginning to actually influence the atmosphere in a way that actually is going to hit us back. And many people are beginning to realize that we are living we are all living in this planet. In the moment we move in one direction, basically there will be a reaction. I mean, in chemistry, we have something called the Le Chatelier principle. It's almost like any action you actually produce in a chemical system is going to obtain a reaction to try to keep the balance. And sometimes those reactions to keep the balance are not going to favor us. They are going to be actually bad for us. But the planet doesn't understand that. Yeah, we just one animal as all the others. But then this animal, us, is actually having the power to change the shape of the planet in ways basically the only nature can. So basically we are geological force. We are beginning to be almost equal to geological forces when we are changing the planet.
So that's a really great overview of, you know, the wider importance of looking into these processes and figuring out how we do them. But I thought we could take a big step back down to Earth and to the smaller scale. And I wonder if you could tell us a bit more about how you would actually go about extracting these things. How, as an analytical chemist, do you start by taking a waste material, and where do you start by saying, there's something useful in here, yeah, I want to get it out? How does that all work?
Well, it's simple. It's basically you get your eyes on a compound, and let's say again with the work we did with DSA Environmental, you have this vanadium pentoxide. So what we are trying to do is developing smart materials, and these smart materials basically are polymers that we fabricate, and these polymers are going to be specific. Or we design them to be specific for the materials or the compounds we are interested in. So when you go to the lab, you are creating something that when you actually get your waste, you can use waste to extract the vanadium pentoxide, for example, from the ashes, using like a little bit of acid leach, or like slightly acidic solutions. So not too strong, but you basically put them in solution. And then if you put this solution in contact with our materials, this vanadium pentoxide is going to actually be attracted by our materials and it's going to be trapped. Another example we have, or we've produced in the past, is rhenium. I mean, rhenium is a very important, it's a very rare material. Not many people actually know that that material, basically that metal, basically. But that's the funny thing is rhenium is a very tough material. It's basically one of the elements with a higher melting point in the periodic table. And because of that, rhenium is actually used in alloys, super alloys, that you use in the aviation industry. So when you have these engines that are going to withstand high temperatures or high pressures, basically these materials, these super alloys, contain 1.5% of rhenium, or 3%, I mean, depending on the... And this rhenium is going to give them that tough behavior. And we have 10,000 tons in the planet. The moment rhenium goes away, we cannot fabricate more engines, blades for power generators and things like that. So what do we do if we, and then of course there are material scientists, there are chemists, physicists that actually work in trying to replace it, but at the moment we don't have any alternatives. So we are stuck with this material, we need to recycle it. So what we did is we designed a polymer, effectively a plastic, although I know I'm careful saying plastics because they have bad press these days. This polymer, we designed a polymer that was going to be so specific for rhenium that basically in the moment you put rhenium and this plastic in contact, the rhenium is trapped by our polymer. And then basically what you do is you dissolve the metal and then this rhenium is in solution. And then suddenly you put it in contact with our material and then the rhenium is going to be trapped. And then later you can extract it and then put it back into the circular economy that we were actually talking about before. So that's the idea that metals, you don't, and then rhenium, for example, is not mined in a rhenium mine, doesn't exist. It's basically it's a subproduct from the copper mining industry. So when you are mining for copper, you basically get the rhenium. Again, it's but then if we can reuse it, and for example, there are many companies actually, all the engines you get from the planes, they are not thrown away. They're actually waiting for someone to come and actually recycle them. And that is the way things are going these days. Especially many industries are actually keeping those materials because in the future, maybe we're going to find ways to get them back into the environment and actually all back into industry. And that's what we are trying to do in Lincoln. We're trying to actually create these smart materials that are going to trap specific compounds and actually put them back into industry.
So your smart material, as you call it, it basically is similar to a plastic, but it's not plastic. And it's smart in that it's able to recognize effectively the product that you're trying to pull out. So in this case, the rhenium. So in a way, it almost acts like a bit of a sponge in that it's able to soak up and lock in that rhenium, which it almost sounds really too simple and too straightforward, I guess, because what I'm thinking now at the moment is how, you know, when you're at school, you're taught about reversible and non-reversible reactions. And I think many of us, we still have a mindset, whereas we see products that once they've been made and constructed and energy has been put in to making a final product, it's almost seen as very difficult or impossible to kind of undo that. But it's actually really reassuring to hear that this process can, with some real hard work and ingenuity, be made to be quite simple to kind of undo and get the useful stuff back.
There's a lot of science behind it. I mean, it's basically, you need to do lots of calculations. We are using computers to fabricate these materials. We do like lots of theoretical calculations to find because we are creating effectively a monomer, and this monomer is going to be shaped in the form of the compound that we are trying to actually extract. I mean, the most typical analogy you can find to basically make you understand how they work is like enzymes and substrates in the body, or the antibody and antigens. Now that we are with COVID, basically people understand better how it works. But yeah, we're fabricating in a way that it basically surrounds the material we want to actually create or basically trap. And then we are going to look at the shape and the chemical interactions. And that's why basically we're using computers to actually decide which monomers or which building blocks are the best to actually create that polymer, that material. And afterwards, basically, the next time this compound of interest, call it a metal, call it a valuable organic compound, or not valuable, basically a poison or a toxin, we're going to present this compound in the presence of our material, then there will be actually, as you said very well, a sponge. It will be actually drugged into the core and then stay there. And it's not going to go easily until you actually use your clever chemistry and then you elute it with a combination of solvents or water with acids or bases. So, but yeah, it can be simple or it can be very complicated, it depends on the material. So, but it's not like a magic solution for everything. You need to study each compound and then you need to study what polymer is going to be best for each compound. So, I mean, by the way, we didn't invent them. I mean, I'm not trying to get the ownership. They are called molecularly imprinted polymers. There are many people out there basically working on these smart materials. And there are actually companies using them already for different applications. What we are trying to do here is basically go for those applications that haven't been exploited and have a commercial interest.
And I think one area of interest would be where else these kind of smart materials could be used. So these smart materials which are able to recognize the shape of particular compounds that might, whether they be, like you say, poisons or toxins, or which might also be useful chemicals. Are there other applications for these materials, for instance, in, you know, cleaning up environmental disasters or chemical spills?
Yeah, I mean, for chemical spills, basically, that would be very easy. It's basically, if you know the chemical you're trying to clean, it's almost like getting one of these materials, basically suctioning everything or basically collecting that waste and then put it through a filter. I mean, you see, some people have designed these materials to trap antibiotics. So, and we have a problem with antibiotics in the environment. So farmers are using antibiotics to prevent animal diseases. And actually, not just animal diseases, diseases that actually are bad for humans or microorganisms that could develop and attack us, basically, if you actually give antibiotics to cattle, basically, you can prevent those things, but also make the cattle healthier. But then, basically, all you have residues from cattle waste, that ends in our water streams. So some people are developing these materials to trap those antibiotics and eliminate them from the environment. So it's basically, it's happening. I mean, they are beginning to be more and more common. And I mean, there is no match. I mean, this research, these polymers have been with us for a long time. I mean, like 20, 30 years. But there's still basically that step between, or basically from the lab environment to a commercial and industrial application. And that's where we still need more research. And that's what we are trying to do, is how we can go from the bench to the industrial application easily.
So I guess that's a time old scenario where, you know, science can come up with the solutions to a problem, but science alone can't fix them. It has to rely on other people. It has to rely on the human factor and how humans decide to take that technology and implement it, incentivize its use, make sure that it's actually something that people can need and use. And I guess that means, you know, for stuff like this, I imagine it would be quite important for researchers in this field to be working quite closely with manufacturers and big industrial corporations to make sure that the solutions that they're coming up with are actually something that these people can use and implement. So what do you see your area of research focusing on going forward? Or what would you like to see your area of research start to produce in the next 5 to 10 years?
I would like to produce materials or these polymers in a way that they are going to be biodegradable. So actually, the polymers themselves can be decomposed, or second, that we produce them in a way that are environmentally friendly, and we can basically, to be more concrete, is basically try to actually get water purification systems. So basically, water is a massive problem in the world. Access to clean water, or even just cleaning up the water that comes out of our industry. I would like to develop all these polymers to actually make sure that the waters we are actually drinking and the waters basically that end in the sea or in our rivers basically are absolutely pure. Because then, again, we would eliminate problems like the presence of bisphenol or contaminants or even hormones that are affecting our health, and not our health. It's basically they're affecting other species. So it's almost like getting filters out there where we can actually eliminate all the products that shouldn't be there.
I mean, that would be amazing if there was all kinds of these smart materials, these smart filters that were able to, you know, have a smart filter for everything to get rid of all these, yeah, these contaminants. I think that would be a fantastic way to continue to do and produce the things we like and that we're used to and that we need, but in a way that doesn't harm the planet, in a way that starts to reduce our impact on the world and its resources.
But yeah, I think we're getting better. I mean, I'm not pessimistic. I know that some people say, well, but if you look at the environmental laws we have now and compare them with the environmental laws we had like 30 years ago, they are much better. And if you basically go back in time, I mean, we are basically millions of years ahead, but then we are basically well ahead of the situation we were, for example, in the 50s or the 40s. So I'm optimistic. And I reckon that basically in, again, 20, 30 years' time, our environmental laws will be better. But even better, our technology will be there to actually solve the problem. Because we've done it in the past. I mean, the ozone layer, basically when we had the problem with the hole in the ozone layer, we saw that as a massive problem. And everybody acted together to make sure that basically we were closing it. And now it's basically nearly done. I mean, it's been closed. There were like some reports saying that they were opening, slightly opening again. But to be honest, again, that tells you when the scientific community, industry, and governments act together, suddenly you have that we can make it happen.
Jose, thank you so much for coming on the show and for helping us shine a light on this really vitally important industry and area of research.
No, thank you. I mean, it's been a really, really nice conversation.
Spotlights is produced by me, Matt Young, for the University of Lincoln in association with Siren Radio. To learn more, visit spotlights.blogs.lincoln.ac.uk. Thanks for listening.